Hi everybody, welcome back to Photo Talk with Style on Nylon. This is episode 11. Today, Jay McLaughlin and I, we talk about in-camera double exposures, the importance of selecting your focal point on your camera. We talk a little bit about shooting film, a few analog tips, and then we launch into a few sort of bigger questions. Is it important to print photos? How to print photos? What photos do you print? We also ask ourselves whether we still like to experiment with photography, even though we're photographing every day. So I hope you enjoy the chat. Oh yes, and just one more thing. It's worth noting that this is a broadcast that was originally on Instagram Live, so you'll probably hear me breaking off to say hello to people and to read out questions as they get asked. So again, I hope it's not too annoying. I've heard from people that it's actually okay to listen to. The spontaneity of it all is quite fun. So yeah, fingers crossed. See you later. We're telling your followers that you started a live video.
Whoop-de-doo.
Whoa. Hello, thanks for joining.
Hiya.
Good morning. Jay's very lucky because he's got a coffee. I might have to nip away.
You made me my coffee. Why didn't you make yourself one?
I should have made one for myself as well. Hi there. We've got a few things to talk about today. We've got a couple of how-to points that we're going to go through. And then we've got some more general questions, which were very kindly submitted by our lovely friend, the tool photographer. Hello, Leanne, how are you? Good morning. Okay, so one thing that I've discovered, just recently, was that you could do double exposure in... Oh, sorry, let me introduce Jay, who you all know anyway.
You know me.
Jay's here with me today.
Been around.
And we are just going to do our usual chit-chat, but please submit us any questions as we're going along.
Ask anything.
Yeah. You're good. Good. We're good. We are well.
We are good. How are you, Leanne?
Hope you're well. So. Okay, in camera, double exposure. I only discovered this the other day.
So it used to be a thing that you could do with film cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, you can't do it on your trip, which we're going to talk about later.
I've got an old real film camera here, which we're going to talk about as well.
But on certain cameras, you can take a picture.
We're talking about double exposure.
And then you have to wind the film on.
Yeah, and then take the picture on top of it.
And yeah, but you wind the film on to take the next picture.
Yeah.
Whereas if you don't wind it on and you take another picture,
you get a double exposure.
Yeah. So obviously with digital, that was a very, you can't do it because it just creates a new file and whatever.
Yeah.
Now, obviously cameras now can do double exposure.
Yeah, so most DSLRs, and recently I discovered the pen, and that includes the EPL7, the EPL8, and the F. I'm saying EPL7, I don't know. No, I know the EPL8 and the F do it, because I did
update. I imagine the 7.
I imagine the 7 does it as well. So
but
there's
don't quote us on it.
There's a setting that you can go into, it's in the second camera menu, and it's just literally multiple exposure.
Yeah.
And when you switch that on, you can then take two images that will overlay, and then you will have a very, hopefully, very beautiful double exposure photograph. But what I've discovered is that it's not that easy, because how do you take a double exposure that looks beautiful?
There is a very fine art to doing good double exposure. To be honest, I haven't done a deliberate double exposure. I've done accidental ones.
Yeah, which turn out nice.
But I haven't done a deliberate double exposure since I was about 16.
Okay, that's so interesting. I mean, because I've literally just started doing about a week ago, only because, again, Charlie, the tool photographer, has been doing some really beautiful flower-themed double exposures on his Instagram. I just thought, I'm going to give this a go, not even realising. Who just popped? Hello, Charlie. We're talking about double exposures all because of you. So we're just talking about in-camera double exposures, which you can do. I've discovered that you can do it on the pen very easily. But although you can do it, what we're trying to talk about is how to get something that is actually aesthetically pleasing.
Hello. A lot of it is, I mean, there's going to be like combinations or thinking about, if you're thinking about composition, so for example, if you do a picture, like, say, for your first picture.
So let's say we're photographing a flower.
So it's always going to be two halves.
Yeah.
You can do something with, say, a lot of sky that's overexposed. So you've got a big blank area.
So effectively you've got a canvas.
So, yeah, look at it as a canvas. Mm-hmm. And what element do you want in what area?
Yeah.
And kind of make half of it or large portions of it be...
So you could have a big empty sky with a kind of ghostly face.
Yes.
Or something
or
like that.
Or a flower or...
Yeah.
And if you do it in the right way, you could even make the flowers merge into clouds.
Yes, and suddenly the cloud is sort of imprinted with
exactly,
the flowers.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think what Charlie, the tall photographer, has been doing, you've been doing lovely floral images, and I'm assuming that you're just taking the flower and then shifting a little bit to the right and taking it again, so then you've got like an almost kind of like extra blur and extra haze, and it can be very, very beautiful. So that's a kind of different sort of technique.
You should try doing double exposure with your lens, baby.
Oh, I think maybe that's what Charlie's been doing. But yes, that's exactly what I will do. Because I did do quite a nice flowery one in the garden. And then yesterday I did one where I wish I could show you, but I did a selfie in the mirror, the camera. And then on the rest of this table, on my kitchen table, there's a whole load of dying flowers. But I used those to kind of overlay with a selfie, and it came out surprisingly well.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with double exposure, there's not necessarily any right or wrong. It is purely experimentation at its rawest form of you will do so many that look rubbish.
And then there'll just be one. So it's a bit like art, really.
It really is art. I mean, and actually, because there's many ways of doing it. Like, if you can do it in camera, but equally, if you're a dab hand with Photoshop, you can just get two photos and overlay them.
There's also an app that I think they're called something else now, but they launched three or four years ago called Double, D-U-B-B-L-E. And they were all about randomizing double exposures. Mm. So you would upload your photograph, press whatever, and then they would merge it with somebody else's random one. And you could get something very beautiful.
Yeah.
Mainly because it was so completely random, it was unexpected. You're like, oh my God, I would never have thought of that. Yeah. Or that's just, you know, because if you're trying to just do it in your own head, it's sometimes you have your own limitations.
Exactly. I mean, people used to do it in the darkroom as well, which would be similar to doing it in Photoshop. And just overlay two photos onto the same
Charlie's saying, I've done some like that and some with blurred bokeh light coming through trees. Yeah. I bet that is gorgeous. But it is something you just need to kind of really experiment with and take your time.
Yeah. My double story of light.
My double story of light. New hashtag. Yeah. absolutely. Well, I'd love to know if any of you are experimenting with double exposure. It's quite fun. Like I say, for anyone who uses the pen camera, it's very easy to find in the menu. You just go to the camera 2 menu and it's just in that menu. So there are three options. You put multiple exposure on, you put overlay on, and then there's auto gain, right? And that's to do, I think, with the level of brightness of one of the images.
So... having not used it, this is purely speculation.
Have a look, I'll show you.
I would imagine, so the thing with doing double exposures in a film perspective is that if you do a correct exposure on a page, you get whites and blacks and whatever. If you then do another picture on top, a lot of it will just be overexposed because you exposed two pictures on the same thing.
Yeah, and then
so
that's what I had yesterday.
So you kind of want to do half and half.
Well, that's what was happening to me yesterday. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, should I put auto gain on? And that kind of solved the problem for me. And it meant that the floral bits of my picture were coming out darker, which is what I wanted. Yeah. How about a new hashtag for us all to try double exposure? Yes, I think it's a great idea.
My double story of life.
My double story of life. My
seeing double.
Seeing double. Okay, we will think of something for that because that'd be quite fun to do. Anything else to comment on double exposure? Do you think black and whites work better than colour?
Black and whites, not necessarily black and whites. I mean, black and whites is the more traditional way of doing it because it's easier. But, I would say keeping colours to a minimum. So it doesn't have to be black and white. I mean, if you're doing florals, you can have a pink flower on a largely green background with like that kind of stuff.
So maybe it is about paring down the elements.
Yeah, I mean, but you've got to bear in mind, I would say take a minimalist approach to each image that you're combining.
Hi, Nicole, we're just talking about double exposure, doing double exposures in camera, which you can do.
Yeah, so take a minimalist approach to each image that you're going to combine because when you put them together, if it's too much, it's just going to be a mess of stuff.
No, I think that sounds about right.
And that can be colour, composition, elements,
Yeah. So start experimenting with more minimal ones and maybe then build up.
Yeah.
So you might want a really nice, beautiful, open beach.
Exactly. The other thing you can do, and it sounds really cheesy and it can look very cheesy, but it can also, if you get it right, look amazing, is think about the story that you're doing. Like, rather than just putting disparate elements that happen to make a nice picture, why not try and combine, a portrait with something that person likes?
No, I like that.
Yeah, or like...
Well, this image actually that I was shooting yesterday was meant to be for a story which is like having a bad hair day or one of those days where you don't look very good. So I did a selfie in the mirror with a big hat so you can't see my face. And then I overlaid with kind of like this sort of tangle of, flowers and stuff. So trying to kind of evoke something there. What's that? Hang on. Hi, guys. I've got my secondhand 1.4mm love, my Canon. Thanks for your advice. Oh, so glad to hear that. It's a lovely lens. Some are quite blurry despite steady hand, fast shutter speed. Is there something I'm doing wrong?
If you're shooting at really, really, really wide apertures, so f1.4 or f1.8 or f1.2 if you're lucky, or 0.95 if you've got a Voigtlander, then your focal plane and your focal point, and we're going on to focal point in a minute, is very shallow. So what can happen is between you focusing and taking the picture, which depending on how quick you are can be like not very long or it can be a second. If you're shooting a person, that person can move slightly.
Yeah.
You can move slightly.
Yeah.
And
I suppose, you're saying that you've got steady hand, fast shutter speed.
The difference between breathing in and out sometimes. If you're shooting at really, really wide apertures.
Are you shooting indoors? Because remember, you do need enough light. Sometimes things can... If you're indoors at night, you are going to struggle. If you're outdoors with loads of lovely light, you really shouldn't be getting... a blurry result.
The other thing that I would say is...
Hello, everybody. We are talking photography today. This is Jay, for the people who just joined, fashion photographer. And at the moment, we are discussing focal points.
We're moving on to and blur on wide aperture lenses.
Yeah.
The other thing that you can have is that people will zoom in. They'll get... This is the sort of error of the digital age. Is people get their picture and they zoom in one-to-one to check focus.
Yeah.
Now, I used to do it back in the day. I used to do it. And if you go on any photography forum, they do it.
What do they call you? Pixel junkies?
Pixel peepers.
Pixel peepers.
And the thing is, and what completely changed my life was I scanned in all of my old 6x4 prints.
And you saw?
And I saw that when I zoomed in one-to-one, they were all out of focus.
I think people can get really caught up with sharpness and clarity, which I can understand to a certain extent. But I think at the end of the day, if you've got a photograph that is full of life and is very beautiful and very aesthetically pleasing, it doesn't matter if aspect is not 100% sharp.
But also, you don't look at a picture one-to-one.
And that's not how you view it. And certainly now, because we're viewing so much on small screens.
Exactly. Like, I don't worry about it. Some of the most iconic photos ever created aren't sharp.
But at the same time, I suppose when you are learning to use your camera, you want to know that you can achieve that if you want.
Of course.
It is a kind of, you want to make sure. So, maybe if it's possible that the lens is faulty.
Yeah, alternatively, there could be an issue if you're using, there's a technique called focus recompose.
Yes.
If you're using a center focus point, and generally if, like for a person, for example, you would focus on the nearest eye.
Yeah.
But then you don't necessarily want the nearest eye, right? Smack bang in the middle of the frame. So you would then focus, recompose the shot, and
then take the picture.
That's
how I take my photos, mainly.
What happens, especially if you're relatively close to the person, your subject is a linear up-down focal plane, but your perspective, it moves in a curvature as you move down... When you recompose, this is totally techie and geeky.
Yeah.
So you see
me glazing over.
So technically, by focusing and recomposing, you're putting it out of focus if you're shooting at such a low aperture. So I would always advocate, if you're shooting really wide apertures, move your focus point up as close to where
Yeah, so she, Florist, I think the thing also I just wanted to check, and we're going to speak to, we're going to talk about this just about now, is you've got control of your focal point and you are selecting on a specific point, because you need to give the camera that information to be able to take an in-focus photograph. And this is a conversation I had somebody last night with about last night with somebody on through DM on Instagram. Was she was just asking about, she was using the 45mm, which is a portrait lens, which you do get very nice blur, and she was asking me, how do I get actually everything in focus? Should I not be using a focal point selection? And I said, well, no, you always have to use a focal point selection, because otherwise you can't tell the camera what you want it to do.
Exactly, yeah.
And I think I have met people, I think it was one of the first things that I figured out how to do with the camera, so I always take it for granted sort of knowing this, but, you know, bringing up the focal selection grid on your camera screen and then being able to move the focal selection around, and you can have it as a bigger grid or a much, you know, more sort of finely tuned one, is absolutely key to creating the photograph.
Yeah, because
if you don't make that focal selection point, you're not going to get a photograph that is in focus, or it's not going to be created as you want it.
And your eye will always be drawn to the sharpest point.
Yeah, so sharpest points. So traditionally, the centre, but that's a bit boring. So then you go onto the point, rule of thirds, you go to the different points on the grid, and you get a more interesting looking photo.
I mean, if you're shooting people, then we, as human beings, we are always drawn to...
Indoors, lots of light.
Always drawn to people's eyes and faces. So that's what we go for.
Yeah.
The only thing that gets in the way of that is we look at text.
Hi, Andrew.
So if someone's wearing a slogan t-shirt, we look at that first.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. I think we may have answered She Flourishes' question, which is great, because you said, okay. Yes, so it's about focal point selection, which I'm so glad we're talking about that today. Hi, Andrew. How are you? Thanks for swinging by. We've talked a little bit about double exposure, but I'll put this out on podcast later so you can catch up with that. And we are now just talking about the importance of selecting your focal point, because I think a lot of people, when they first pick up the camera, you know, if it's on auto and you half focus, you just take it for granted. But, I mean, this... apart from controlling the aperture, the second or the single most important thing to me is to be able to select the focal point on the camera, because in that way...
So, hang on, this is an old FD lens mount. So is that... I don't know if that's got autofocus.
Oh, so you'll have to do it manually then.
So, I mean,
so you'll be focusing...
No, I think FD mounts were digital, which were autofocus, but it's not it's not an EOS mount. Modern DSLR Canon.
So that might be why.
So there might be an issue there. Manually. Also, it's an old lens, which actually means that it will have...
It will be softer. It won't be as sharp. I have that with an old 50mm.
But that's the beauty of them.
Yeah.
Like, it's an aesthetic.
One thing to look at on your camera, on the Canon, is to see if it's got a focus peaking... a function, and that means that when you are manually...
If it's a DSLR, it won't. Only mirrorless cameras do focus peaking.
Oh, sorry, it's only a mirrorless camera thing. Focus and recompose you. Got to be careful you don't hang the... You've got a few spelling mistakes in there, Andrew.
Yes. But yes, that's what that's what I basically said, because when you recompose, you can actually, if you're using really wide apertures, you can actually put your picture out of focus.
Out of focus. Yeah. I mean, I do admit that when I am taking a photograph, probably the time spent most for me is focusing and recomposing, like, and getting that focus just right.
I always put my focus point roughly where I want it, because I'm lazy,
and
it's just easier to put my focus point there already.
It's interesting. Everybody has a different way of doing it, and I think...
I used to focus recompose.
Yeah, I don't always do it. It just kind of depends, but often, because maybe I'm not as clever as Jay, I have my focal point somewhere random on the screen.
I noticed that earlier.
I just have to bring it back to where I want. So that's just kind of my process.
So what I love about a lot of, like, especially with the Pen F and, well, the EPL 8 and 7 and all that, they do it, but most cameras you can customise different buttons.
Yeah.
So the FN1 button I have here.
Oh, so you have that, and you customise it to bring it back to the middle.
Yeah.
Oh, that's clever. I'll do that then.
Yeah.
So
you can basically assign
your focal point, centre focal point, to a special button.
Yeah.
Black button.
Back button focus.
Oh, back button
focus. Yeah, so I don't subscribe to back button focus. I don't think it makes that much difference, to be honest.
I don't even know what it is.
It's so basically, you know, when you half press the shutter, you focus. Well, so for example, you would use the FN1 button, for example, to focus.
Oh.
And then you would use the other button to take a picture. So it's like a two button situation.
Yeah. Why do people do that?
There is argument to say that you will get more stuff in focus.
Interesting. I'll have to try that one out. Can I ask about photo processing? Do I shoot RAW and how do you edit your picture? What software would you recommend? I don't shoot RAW.
I do.
But Jay does.
All the time.
But I use Photoshop and Lightroom. I don't shoot RAW because I'm just a bit scared of really large files which kill my computer. But Jay has a lot of backup.
I just ordered an 8 terabyte backup drive.
Yeah. Yeah, back button to focus and pictures will get clear. So that's somebody saying that back button focus does work.
Like,
I'm going to try it.
I'm a big fan of using what works for you. So just because it doesn't work for me doesn't mean it won't work for you.
We can can you do a quick guide to editing RAW?
Editing RAW, if you want to have a stress-free life, shoot RAW, because you can change white balance after the fact.
You're never going to lose a photo, basically.
Unless it's out of focus, you can't fix that. But I'm a big fan of Lightroom. Lightroom is my go-to software. I do 99% of my editing in Lightroom, and also cataloging of all of my images. Geotagging, which I'm a big fan of as well. So Lightroom is epic.
I know. I mean, I was with a blogger the other day on a trip, and she shoots in RAW and edits her photographs, and her editing is phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible what you can achieve.
Editing a RAW file will give you, especially if you like more extreme edits.
Yeah.
You will get a much cleaner result versus editing on a JPEG.
Yeah.
Because
you've
got more
information
to work with.
Yeah.
So play with it. Try it. You might think, well, actually, it's not giving you the results. I mean, the first thing I would say is that when you take a RAW file, before you do any editing, it looks crap next to a JPEG.
Because JPEGs have optimized.
They're optimized, they've got contrast added to them and sharpness and all of that stuff that's kind of done. RAW is plain, blank, nothing, and you do it all yourself. So there's an extra element.
Yeah.
But with Lightroom, you can set up import presets and automate everything, so...
How do you keep consistent style, always use the same actions? I mean, I use similar filters, I have pretty much the same actions, but you have to adapt it to each photograph, but I end up with photographs that are consistent because I'm kind of applying the same things to them.
Yeah, I mean, also, and going to Martin's question... I have...
Do you use an import preset in Lightroom?
Yeah, firstly, no one uses the Olympus software. It's crap. I had to use it recently because...
What Olympus software?
Well, I was... image capture. I was shooting on the new Olympus TG5 in RAW.
Yeah.
But nothing supports it because it's so new.
Right.
Because you have to wait for the...
So how do you edit it,
so then? I had to import into image capture.
Right.
And then convert everything into a JPEG.
From an ORF.
But yeah, so no one uses that. It's rubbish. But so I have a billion presets. I've got most of the VSCO presets. So if you use VSCO Cam on the phone...
Yes, exactly. So I think I spoke about this last time. I did a live a couple of weeks ago without you when you were in the Caribbean. and I mentioned the fact that VSCO now has available their mobile presets for desktop.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good.
Yeah,
did you buy yours?
Yes.
Yeah, how much were they?
Expensive. I got bundled.
Okay, well, it's worth
bundled,
knowing, because I signed up to this VSCO X thing, which is like 20 quid a year, and they sent it to me for free.
Okay.
So
yeah,
worth
but I've
knowing.
Got all of the presets, like
you bought everything.
Hundreds of them.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I've got those, and gradually I use them less and less because I take presets that I like and then
change them and adapt
them.
Well, that's what I do. At the moment, I use a VSCO mobile preset. I'm using A5 on my images I'm editing on my laptop, but I use the half, the 50% one, and then I make adjustments on top of that.
Yeah. So I save multiple presets. Sometimes I create them from scratch because it's not difficult. But then I do apply on import because it just takes one step out of
You apply it on import, yeah.
Yeah, so when you go to import your files, you can select a preset to apply, and then as it imports, it applies a preset.
I should do that.
Job done.
I should do that. Okay, cool. So we've got a couple more questions to go. I just wanted to introduce the fact, I think I mentioned this last time, I am trying to embrace film photography for the first time in a long time. I used to Film isn't dead, the analogue renaissance. Jay, what are your top tips for shooting with film?
Embrace the imperfections.
Yeah.
Embrace the fact that you'll have stuff out of focus,
yeah,
especially on something like this where you've
so
got
let's
four...
just say a roll of 36, how many good photos are you, would you imagine that you'll get out of that?
Oh, 36, obviously.
I'm not.
No, it doesn't always work like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't on digital. Why would it on film? I think, yeah.
I've looked at the settings on this seem to be quite straightforward. And because I now have my head around digital settings so well, I can actually look at these settings and figure out exactly what I need to do when I'm taking a shot, which is maybe different from how I was.
Yeah, I mean, obviously,
4 or 5 years
the,
ago.
The number one thing is that depending on the camera you get, obviously you've got more control over camera settings and exposure settings, but your ISO is, or ISO as it's
ISO.
Actually,
that's is it? Apparently it's not ISO.
No, it's not. No, or ISO. It's not ISO.
Okay,
it's
so
ISO.
It's a word.
It's a word.
It just happens
yeah.
to be all capitalized.
Yeah. Yeah, I okay. learned that recently.
ISO.
But yeah, it's yeah, that's determined by your film.
Yeah, exactly. So,
so
that big decision's already being made.
Yeah, you can't necessarily change that.
Yeah.
Equally, you can't change white balance.
Mm.
That's also determined by your film.
Your film as well.
Your film also determines colours.
Can I suppose that explain the filmic filters that we're constantly trying to recreate?
Well, exactly. So if you look
done.
At the old... If you look at the VSCO filters, especially the ones on Lightroom, they're all based off film.
Yes, no, I saw that. So here's a good question. I'm about to get my hands on a Pen EE2.
I have an EE3. Not to say it's better than yours, because I don't know. I have no idea.
Do you have any special advice, and what should I pay attention to? What film do you recommend?
To begin with, whatever's cheap.
I just bought a bundle of film off eBay.
Yeah, just...
That's random.
I would say, to begin with, just get used to shooting film and the limitations and stuff like that, rather than spending ridiculous amounts of money.
Do you know what I went out and bought? I should have bought it downstairs. It is a box that when you have the negatives of your film, you can run them through and it converts them into JPEGs.
Yeah, but they're normally low-res JPEGs. They're not normally super high-res.
I spent £89 on it.
I mean, I might be wrong if technology might have improved since I last looked.
No, I'm going to have a look. Once I have my first film shot, I'm going to get the negatives developed and then I'm going to put them through this box.
Now, the interesting thing with the Pen cameras is similar to Micro Four Thirds being half the size of 35mm, the Pen film cameras are half the size of 35mm.
Right.
So when you get your pictures developed, firstly, the viewfinder is vertical rather than horizontal.
Yeah.
And when you get your pictures developed, you get two pictures
per
print.
Oh, and so what do you do? Just cut them
up? Well, you cut them in half or capitalise it on and do kind of...
Ones that will work together.
Diptychs.
Oh, that's so interesting. That's so cute. I hadn't even thought of that. So when I'm shooting on this, I actually should be shooting in mine. But
no, that
not
the
this
trip
one.
Is
the trip
full frame.
Oh, okay. But this
but
Pen
EE2.
Yeah. I don't even the know
pen
what that is, looks like. Is it?
It's. I have one.
Is it smaller than this?
In fact, on my Instagram, which you can't look at because we're using our phones for live. Yeah. But yeah, on my Instagram, the no, it's got a trip. Yeah, I can.
Is it smaller than this? About
the same. About the same size.
Okay. Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So that was just a little dip into analog. We're going to come back to analog once I've taken some actual film.
We need to go and have an analog film.
Jay and I are going to go out for an analog film day.
We both got trips.
And have a good try with that. So,
I'd also say, pro tip, keep your film in the fridge.
Oh yes, Jay keeps his film in the fridge. I'm going to do that.
It makes it last longer.
Okay, so we have spoken about so far double exposure, focal points, a few analog tips, something wrong with a Canon lens, which I think that we, goodbye, and hello, that I think we fixed. And now we've just got a couple of good questions that came in from Charlie again, the tour photographer, always is so wonderfully supportive of us. Thank you very much. Okay, let's do these ones here. Do you guys still love to experiment? Do you put the camera down when you have free time? What about you, Jay?
Yes.
Do you?
Both. So I love to experiment. I'm always looking at other photographers, or not even just photographers, people that take photos, I was saying, like, there's a blogger that I'm currently inspired by, because I think what she's doing is completely different to what the rest of the bloggers are doing. And some of the composition, or, well, her and the guy that's taking, or girl that's taking her photos, I think what they're doing has kind of changed my perspective, and I realised that I was getting far too, thinking far too much about what I'm doing, rather than being a bit more
and
free.
And worried about the perfection of a photo.
Yeah, so
these are a bit more free and easygoing. And
that
like
blogger is Sarah Michaela, who is a lovely, lovely human being.
Yeah, Sarah is lovely and just incredibly...
check her out. Her feed is epic.
Hello, Mom.
She's one of the few bloggers I think has truly mastered the art of being editorial.
Yeah. And she's very creative and very bold and brave, I think, with her shots. And she's not kind of fallen into just doing the same old thing again and again.
Exactly. So, check her out. But, so obviously there's that. So that's encouraged me to experiment. Not experiment with things like double exposure and techniques and things like that, but experiment with composition and mindset and what I am thinking about or worrying about or concentrating.
Do you ever have
on.
Days where you're just like, because when I go on a trip, I tend to take thousands of photographs and I photograph myself out, and then when I come back home, I have to have a couple of days off where I just think, oh, I can't do anything more. I need to refill the creativity well, as it were.
I think the thing, I don't force myself to take time out. If I'm inspired to take a photo, I take a photo.
Yeah.
If I'm not inspired, I don't, and I don't worry about it. So, for example, there have been times when I've gone out, like, of an evening, and I've taken loads and loads of photos of all my friends and everything, and I went out last night and I didn't take any.
And do you always take a camera, or are you using phone as well?
Either or, depends.
Yeah.
If it's a big night, I'll take a small pocket camera. Usually a Tough, because they're waterproof and shockproof, so if I get
off around.
My face and drop it or spill drinks on it, it doesn't matter. But, you know, I've used phones, but not very often.
I think everybody in the creative industry needs a bit of downtime, a bit of time off, because you can't always be on top-level creation.
No. I think the thing with anything creative is you can't force it. And B, like, if you are inspired to be creative, then be creative.
I find that. I mean, I often find that if I am tired out from having taken too many photographs for whatever reason, I'll give myself some time off, and then suddenly something will pop up and I'll want to be like, oh, I want a photograph, and it just comes. You just have to wait for that.
It's easy for me to not take photos when I'm sitting in my flat. Because my flat
Your flats are such a familiar environment.
Exactly, so everything's mundane and normal. And don't get me wrong, I love my flat, but it doesn't inspire me to take photos.
Yeah.
Versus if I go travelling, then I will take those. All new.
Yeah, exactly, all new. Last question, is it important, so this is a question I guess to me and Jay, is it important to print photos? Do you do it? And what photos do you print?
I would say it's not important. It is nice. Because it gives photos a kind of unique tactility. It makes them real.
I know. Well, this is one of my resolutions this year. I did a really lovely photo book just recently. There were some pictures of Gus and a recent holiday, and I absolutely loved it. So I promised myself that from now on, I'm going to start printing out. And I did this through Inkify, I think. And I've actually just seen that now they do these very sweet little ring binder. Very cute little ring binder books, basically.
Yeah.
And they're like, I don't know, they're about 20 quid or something like that. So I'm just going to start doing those, I think, because I don't print out my photographs at all. And I actually think it's a shame, because I've got this kind of fear of the apocalypse. And when the apocalypse comes, all our photographs are going to be once the internet goes down. We'll never see another photo again.
See, I do have a little 6x4 photo printer.
Yeah.
Which...
But isn't the ink so expensive for those?
Not really. It's like...
No?
I think it's about 25 quid for 180 pictures.
Because
you get a box
that's
got the paper and... Because it's not ink, it's like film.
Oh, I see. I've seen that. You bought it when we've done shoots.
So,
yeah.
I think, yeah.
Hello.
I used that and...
We're just talking about printing photographs. Is it worth it? And if we do, why?
Who is the book company you just mentioned? Inkify.
Oh, Inkify.
Inkify.
Inkify. So you do it through your, through an app on your phone. It's great. You can either just kind of go and select your Instagram photographs, or you can select folders. So I'm compiling folders on my phone of edited photographs, and you just select them, and you do it all through the app.
I have my photos.
Great. I'll get the one I have actually.
I have my photos framed on my walls in my flat because I think that it's good to have pictures on your walls.
Yeah, I mean, I did this book, which a while ago, it's the only one I've ever done, and it's mainly of Gussie, my little boy Gus, and, and kind of holidays and just really nice moments. And actually, I adore it because I don't have any photo albums at all. This was about 24 quid.
I think that's the probably one of the things that I dislike most about digital is the fact that, you know, growing up, I've got holiday photo albums. I mean, I recently when I was last at Mum and Dad's, I went into their attic and got loads of these old photos.
I know, exactly.
And I've scanned them all. So I have copies of them.
Yeah, it's so funny, but we're sort of reversing everything the whole time.
Yeah, but I do think it's a shame that we don't have photo albums. When I first started doing photography as my job, I actually got, every year I would get a photo book of my best work for that year.
Oh, that's a lovely idea.
And I use Blurb to do that.
Blurb, okay.
Blurb.com. So they do hardbacked photo books. But unfortunately, I haven't done it since 2011. Yeah. So now if I want to do it, it's going
to
cost me
the same. If I go back to my parents' house, they have two drawers just full of old photos. Some of them are just loose, some of them are in photo albums. And it's wonderful because you go back through all the memories. And I'm worried that we are not going to trawl through old digital photographs in the same way.
Well, especially because all of our albums, whether it be on Facebook or just pictures on Instagram, because whilst algorithms have gone non-chronological, everything else is still chronological. I'm not going to scroll back years and years and years through pictures.
And also that it's not curated in the same way as well. Like a photo album about a particular holiday or a wedding or something like that. I mean, I suppose that does exist on Facebook, but I don't look at Facebook pictures anymore.
No. I don't look at Facebook anymore.
I'm a bit over Facebook.
But like I say, I think I'm going to spend some time on it just to see what happens.
Jay's got this theory that Facebook owning Instagram now... that the two are so interlinked that if you grow your Facebook, then you can more easily grow your Instagram. That's his...
It would make sense.
No idea if that makes sense at all.
No, I don't know if it's true, but it would make sense.
I have so many family pics I need to print, but don't because I've not processed them. Yeah, and no, I'm the same. What do you mean? Do you mean editing them? Yeah, I'm the same. So I'm storing up family photos to edit to then print, but obviously when do you ever have the time to do that?
You have to make the time, unfortunately.
I know, exactly. Like, well, I feel really annoyed with myself because actually this weekend, Inkify had 20% off their photo books. I was like, right, I'm going to do some. And I didn't. So that was annoying. So, yeah.
Do I think there is something viscerally different about prints?
Yeah, but it's the same about books. I mean, I wrote about this on my blog at the weekend. Like, you know, it's a different experience reading a real-life print book. You remember the story in a different way. You connect differently to it somehow. I mean, I'm a huge Kindle reader. I read all my books on Kindle now, and now I promise myself that from now on, special books that are special to me, I will also have a print copy of.
We like physical things.
Yeah.
And a photo print is a physical thing.
Oh, okay, I'll have a look at that.
Versus a digital picture on Instagram, which is not real. I mean,
But if you view the picture digitally, how much of the experience are you getting? Are you getting 50% of the experience that you would if you were viewing it? I'd probably say
60 or 70%.
Quantifying it now.
But seeing an actual photo, it's why we still have art galleries. It's why we still have exhibitions.
And people will travel to go to those exhibitions. Absolutely.
And pay lots of money to put a photo in a frame on a wall.
Yeah. No, I don't think... I mean, I think, you know, digital revolution, everything, killing off everything that's analog and print, I just don't think that's going to happen. The two can coexist.
Yeah.
And it's up to us to ensure that they do coexist.
I agree.
I think. Guys, we're going to have to finish up now because Jay has got a train to catch.
I've got
thank you very much.
People to take pictures of.
Thank you very much for joining us today. And I will be putting this out on podcast and streaming it live as well. So you can always... I think in a minute I'll save it to my stories.
You're late. We're leaving now.
Sorry, yeah. It's the end. So it will be available on my stories for the next 24 hours and you can watch the whole thing.
Is that a thing?
It's a thing now. So if I save this, it will sit
epic
on my profile and it will have a little play button.
I've seen that. I didn't know what it was.
Yeah, no, that's that. So that's what we're going to do. And so then you can toggle between stories or live. So just click live if you're viewing.
Amazing.
So you can do, so it will be available on both our profiles for the next 24 hours.
Yeah.
And when I get around to it, I will then strip it and put it into podcast